It's a NewsBuzz edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Iowa State University's Student Union was built back in 1928 as a memorial to students and alumni who had died in the First World War. And the names of these fallen veterans are engraved in the walls of the Union's Gold Star Hall. And as more fallen former ISU students become known, their names are added to the wall. Next Tuesday, that's Veterans Day, a ceremony will be held for three new names that are being engraved there. One who died in May in Afghanistan, another who died on the USS Liberty in the Six-Day War, and another from World War II. The ceremony will honor them, along with two other fallen servicemen whose names were previously engraved, but their sacrifices not publicly remembered. Joining me now, Kristen Erdman. She is marketing coordinator for the Memorial Union. Hi, Kristen.
Hello.
Also, Diane Rasmussen, mother of Derek Rasmussen. She now lives in Omaha and is the mother of one of our fallen honored soldiers. Hello, Diane, and we're very sorry for your loss. Thank you for talking with us.
Sure. Thank you.
Kristen, let's have you tell us a little bit more about this ceremony, what will be taking place on Tuesday.
Sure. Every year we are so honored to put on the Gold Star Hall ceremony. This is sort of our flagship event because the Memorial Union was built here at Iowa State as a living memorial to fallen soldiers. This ceremony is something that we find very important. We really want to focus on the lives of these men and women who died in the theater of war. We'd like to really take the time to focus on who these men were when they were living and who they were when they were students at Iowa State.
Diane Rasmussen, you are the mother of one of the honored soldiers here, Derek. He attended Iowa State University between 1999 and 2002. Mm-hmm. He died in Afghanistan on May 11th of this year.
Yes.
Very sorry for your loss.
Thank you.
Can you tell us a little bit about your boy? Raised in Storm Lake.
He was, yes. I mean, typical little boy, smart, funny, always, you know, kept us guessing.
kept you guessing? Was he into all kinds of things?
Oh, yeah. You know, he would have a lot of, you know, fun things up his sleeve. He was, as he grew up, he always seemed to have such a humorous side to him. And so when he got into high school, he was in one of the school plays that was a comedy and had everybody laughing and rolling. And it just always kind of surprised me. I always used to say to him, where do you come up with this stuff? But, he always kept us laughing. And he was a very upbeat person, always positive.
I understand he loved aviation. What led him to the Marine Corps?
I think he was just, at the time, just looking for a sense of direction. And he got in working with Intel. And, I always knew as a child that he loved to see any of the air shows. Especially we would go to Sioux City, being fairly close to Sioux City, we would go there for air shows. And I knew he had such an interest in aviation. And he has an uncle that was a pilot for a while. And there's a little bit of background, you know, family background with people that fly. And so I knew he was interested. And he kind of followed, along with the Marines. And then after a few years, he decided to pursue the pilot program.
So he became a helicopter pilot.
He did. He flew Blackhawks.
I understand
and
he was
loved it.
he was deployed to Afghanistan in September of 2013, also involved in a very famous rescue, I understand, that of Captain Phillips.
Mm-hmm. He was. Now, at that time, he was not a pilot yet, but he was still with Intel, with the Marine Corps. And, he really got to see some sights. He was always, here again, so positive and upbeat. He never, ever said anything negative. You know, I never heard him complain about a thing. He always, would find the upside of everything and tell me how cool everything was. And he said, this is the best place to visit or whatever. He was on the USS Boxer.
Is that during? Can you tell us any details about the rescue of Captain Phillips he was involved in?
Well, really, I don't know a whole lot because he was Intel, and so they don't reveal a lot of things. But I do know that there were two ships, and he was one of the two ships. One actually had the Navy SEALs that captured Captain Phillips, and then they, you know, lifted him by helicopter to my son's ship, which was the USS Boxer. And I, you know, and here again, he would send us pictures with him standing on the aircraft carrier with helicopters in the background. So he was just so intrigued with flying. And so when he told us that he was going to make the change from the Marine Corps to the Army and become a warrant officer, and so he got through his warrant officer training school, and then that's when he began flight school. And he loved every minute of it. It was pretty intense, but he just thoroughly enjoyed what he was doing.
How did you keep in touch with your son while he was overseas?
We would FaceTime a lot. A lot of times he could call us even on the satellite phone. And, well, I guess we didn't FaceTime then. I guess I didn't have we didn't have access to our iPads. But he would call. Sometimes, you know, if he had a minute, why, and he was working or they had access to satellite phones, why he could call us then. And it was really cool to hear about, you know, he'd describe what he was seeing, or he was in total darkness on the aircraft carrier. And he just, you know, he was very much family-oriented. You know, his family meant a lot to him.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, we would keep in touch periodically, you know, by phone. And then once he went to Afghanistan, why, we tried almost on a weekly basis, not always, but on usually our Saturday or Sunday mornings was our connection time that we would FaceTime with each other because there was a 9.5 hour time difference between the, you know, the two countries. So, but he always, you know, was so excited about everything he did. He just sometimes I could still see him as my little boy that was excited about, you know, an air show when he was
right.
talking about things he had just done.
Right, right. I understand he's been buried in, at Arlington National Cemetery.
He has. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Will you be able to go out and see that grave at some point?
We have not been back since the funeral. My daughter and I and husband were planning a trip back there again. We want to be there for Mother's Day, since that's the day that we received our news. You know,
it was Mother's Day of this year that you received news of his death.
Yes, it was. Here again, I was waiting on Sunday morning, waiting for the, you know, for him to call me on, you know, my iPad for FaceTiming, and we got the knock at the door instead. So, but. We are planning ahead. We're looking ahead, and we're planning a trip, hopefully, to visit for next Mother's Day.
Right.
And, you know, and the other thing that I do want to express is that this Iowa State ceremony has been so touching for me. I'm excited. I'm looking forward to it. Because Derek is buried, you know, in Arlington, which is so far away, it's hard, you know, not to be there to visit his gravesite. But with having his name engraved in the limestone wall of the Gold Star Hall,
yeah.
Has meant so much to me that I know that it is so close that I can still go and visit. You know, he's with me at all times, but this just means more than you can imagine, just to see his name on a wall.
Kristen Erdman, you organized the upcoming ceremony on Tuesday. Tell us about some of the others being honored and having their names engraved on the wall.
Sure. We're actually very excited. We have five gentlemen who will be discussed and honored during the ceremony, and all five gentlemen will have family members attending the ceremony, which is really unique. This is, I think, the first time that everybody there will have had family in attendance, so we're very excited about that. In addition to Derek Rasmussen, we also have Donald Lee Sparks from Glidden, Iowa. Don was a quiet, he was a fun-loving child, really active in the FFA and 4-H, and he attended Iowa State and got a degree in farm operations management in 1968. He attended Iowa State on a draft deferment, so after he graduated, he went into the Army. And right away, he broke his ankle during basic training and really kind of suffered through that training period, but was sent to Vietnam anyway with this injured foot. And just within a couple of weeks of being placed on the ground, he was enlisted as the point person on a mission. And him and another soldier were out kind of ahead of the group being point people and came across enemy fire and were captured, they think, by an enemy force. He was originally listed as, let me get this right, missing in action because of that, because he was captured by these soldiers. And then they thought that he had probably passed away right during that day. Interestingly, about 10 weeks after that, the American soldiers found a Viet Cong soldier, a dead Viet Cong soldier, who had two letters from Donald Sparks on his body. And so the family was notified that, in fact, Donald Sparks was alive and had written these two letters. They were able to see one letter right away and then saw the other letter much later on. But he, you know, talked to his parents. He gave them information that only he would have, things like a bank account number that they could check, and had, you know, messages for his brother and for his dad. So it was a very personal letter, and they were excited to see that. They were then waiting for him to be on the airplane after the conflict when the POWs were returning, based on the fact that they knew that he was alive and he wasn't on the plane. They went to see the plane in Washington. They watched everyone get off. And they didn't see Donald get off. So they've been in contact with the U.S. Department of Defense ever since and have gotten bits and pieces of information as the U.S. Department of Defense continues to research and get more information about what happened to the rest of these POW and MIA soldiers. He's got a couple of kind of unique stories. They spoke to a nurse who was taking care of him in one of the Vietnam hospitals, and she said that he was kind of a wily guy. You know, he always looked at the out the windows, and anytime he heard or he saw an airplane, he would get to these windows and try to signal whoever was overhead. And there is also a story that at one point he did escape with a whole stack of white sheets that he then ran outside as far as he could get and tried to write help on the ground with these white sheets to try to get rescued. Unfortunately, that foot injury that he had going into Vietnam still plagued him, and he was able to be recaptured and brought back to the hospital. They also talked about him being used as he would give blood, so his blood transfusions would be used for injured Vietnam soldiers. And then he also was the captees, the people who took care of him thought that he was maybe a little bit risky. And so they decided that they were going to move him to another POW hospital. And that's where the trail kind of goes cold. They're not sure what happened to him after he left this one POW hospital. So they're still very hopeful that they'll hear from him or that he's out there somewhere and that he is going to be returned to them at some point. In addition to them, we have Charles Douglas King. He was known as Doug King from Muscatine, who was a pararescueman during the Vietnam War. Doug King has a really interesting story. Doug grew up here in Muscatine, Iowa, and he was sort of a guy's guy. He loved being outdoors, and he was an adventurous young high schooler. His favorite activities were things like going on a motorcycle ride, and he started parachuting in high school as a hobby. He liked things that were just a little bit dangerous. So it's not surprising that when he was then drafted into the Air Force at the age of 20, he was selected for special training as a pararescueman. And I'm going to read you this pararescue creed just because it makes sense later on when we're telling a story of what happened to him in the service. This creed is just gets me in the heart. Here it is. It is my duty as a pararescueman to save life and to aid the injured. I will be prepared at all times to perform my assigned duties quickly and efficiently, placing these duties before personal desires and comforts. These things I do that others may live. So this is the duty of a pararescueman. And King was assigned to the 40th Air Rescue and Recovery Squadron, and he was in Thailand. He had actually performed more than 75 missions. He'd done a great job. He had his papers in hand to be sent home on Christmas Eve of 1968. So he was all set to head out and reunite with his family. And that night they learned that a pilot had been ejected from his aircraft and was hanging by his parachute in the neighboring country of Laos and needed to be rescued. And so Doug King volunteered to be a part of this rescue mission the next day, so Christmas morning. And they got in their helicopter and they went over and they could see that this pilot was hanging by his parachute in this tree. And they weren't sure if he was alive, but they knew that they needed to go down and get him. And Doug King volunteered to be the man who was going to go down on the hoist and rescue this pilot. He went down, he was lowered on a stretcher, and he went down, and just as he reached the ground, enemy fire broke out. And he knew that he had to get the pilot loaded up quickly. He did that right away, and just as he was getting the pilot loaded onto the stretcher, the enemy force descended upon them, and he radioed up that he'd been hit. So the helicopter, normally they would raise up above the tree line and then take off, but because they were being shot at, they had to sort of take off right away, and the hoist cord got caught in the trees and it broke. So just at about 10 feet off the ground, both Doug King and this other pilot were dropped to the ground, and Doug was, they think, injured in that small fall, and the helicopter had to fly away in order to, you know, survive and not be shot down. So 2 days later, the helicopter returned with the crew trying to find both the original pilot and Doug King, and they weren't able to recover Doug King's body. They did find the other pilot, but Doug King was missing. So they then listed him as missing in action, I believe. His story is a unique one, and he is actually memorialized via a highway in Muscatine who has the name, the Charles Douglas King Highway, and his name is also on several buildings and military bases. We also have Jerry Leroy Converse, an ISU student from Boone, Iowa. He was killed June 1967 aboard the USS Liberty at the time of the Six-Day War. And then finally, we have a World War II soldier who was from Woodbury, Iowa. His name is Maurice Raskin. He was a pre-vet student here at Iowa State, and he was killed in a strafing mission over Italy in 1943.
In the meantime, can you tell us how many names are engraved on the wall?
Oh, gosh, I don't know.
But I imagine it's a scene where relatives, family members, as we heard from Diane there, come back whenever they want to. It's open during the day, and you have visitors at various times?
Absolutely. It's actually a pretty busy thoroughfare through the Memorial Union. It's the main entrance from the north side from campus, so students are coming and going through the memorial all day long, which is really a testament to the living memorial purpose that it was built for. We love that it's really, you know, a part of the lifeblood of the MU and of campus.
Diane, tell us about the significance for you as a family member, as a society. We must not forget the young men and women who have given their lives for their country. For you more than others as a family member with the sacrifice of your son there, that we not forget their sacrifices.
Exactly. And that's why I just feel that having their name out there for anybody to see, and like Kristen said, walking through the doors, I just can't even explain how much this means to me.
Who will be at the ceremony on Tuesday who knew Derek?
Well, we've actually sent out invitations. I think there's going to be probably 25 to 30 people. They are high school friends, college friends, some are both, and some of the friends were not able to attend his funeral in Arlington because of the expense and that it was so far away. And this, I think, is kind of a closure for them. We actually have a couple friends that are actually flying in from Seattle and that are also Iowa State alumni. And so I think this is, it helps maybe as a type of, you know, just getting together, celebrating Derek's life, and I think it helps everybody that you know, that will be there. It's a happy event, and we are so looking forward to meeting up with some of his friends again. So.
And it sounds like Derek would like to have there be happiness there too, as long
as
well as the honor and the remembrance. You talk about the good sense of humor he had, the laughing. I understand that his old high school in Storm Lake is considering making a bust of him laughing.
They were, that was one of the suggestions that was put out there, because he was always laughing and joking, and they just thought that would be kind of appropriate if somehow they could put together, like, some type of memorial for Derek. And it was, that was one of the first things they talked about, was because of his sense of humor and his laughter, that perhaps a bust might be something that they might consider, because that would be, that would just be so Derek.
Diane, thank you for sharing us with us remembrances of Derek, and we will, many of us, we will not be there in body, but in spirit to remember your son with you and the other fallen ISU graduates. And Kristen Erdman, marketing coordinator for the Memorial Union, thank you very much for telling us about the others, and we wish you a successful and honorable ceremony for these fallen soldiers.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And that does it for this edition of River to River. Our program is produced by Emily Woodbury and Lindsay Moon. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. Podcasting and on-demand audio of River to River available at iowapublicradio.org. Our theme music is written and performed by the River Monks. And we always welcome your comments and questions about this program. Write us an email, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.